Preparing to delve in 3, 2, 1.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Delve. My name is Nathan.
And I'm Alex.
And, Alex, how do you feel about getting in touch with, like, your spirit animal?
I need some peyote if I want to get in touch with my spirit animal, Nathan. That or some acid, I don't know.
Well, you know, you could also spit some acid, and that actually brings us to something we wanted to discuss on this show. Maybe. That's the segue you're getting. It's not the segue that you deserve, but it's the segue you need. So, you're probably aware, in Dungeons & Dragons, that there are, like, kind of some traditional races, and then after, like, Volo's Guide and into Ravnica, when they started to add races, they had a lot of almost monstrous races that were based off of animals.
I mean, they do in the Monster Manual also have these races, like gnolls, mm-hmm. lizard folk, kobolds, goblins, things like that as well.
They just weren't playable characters.
I mean, they technically
originally
aren't off limits. They have rules to play them, but they're not typical, and they're not in the player's handbook. But back in 3.5, you would have, say, lizard folk, and then you would have lizard folk as player characters, and you would have their stat adjustments, mm-hmm. and you would have their level adjustment, because that was a thing back then. I don't think now they would have that. Now it would just be lizard folk gets these traits, and
yeah, they just have rules for it.
Yeah, you can basically break it down from the Monster Manual by taking their special abilities and qualities and traits, like dark vision or spell-like abilities that they have, from not class levels. So you can easily take stuff from the Monster Manual and make it a playable race.
So I could actually just make my unicorn pretty easily, is what you're saying.
I mean, yeah, you would just take a base unicorn from the book.
Like, even though they have not made officially the rules for a player class.
Yeah,
a player race.
It'd be difficult, because you'd have to give it a higher intelligence so it could talk and stuff, but yeah, you could.
That was always my problem, was thinking about, like, since it's not built as a player character, that it would be correctly balanced and made sense as a player character.
It would be a magic unicorn, of course, so.
Always. It's always a magic unicorn.
You can name it Charlie!
Nope. Snowball. we know who the unicorn is. But anyway, after like, Volos and forward, they actually started to build the official balanced player races that you could play that were based off of a lot of those animals. So you ended up with the Tabaxi, of course the Tortle, which is what I'm mostly familiar with. The Kenku, the Aarakocra, the Bugbears.
Bugbears have been in the Monster Manual, by the way.
Yeah.
Just throwing that out there.
That they're also
a thing
they're
that,
not
that's existed forever.
Oh yeah, yeah, I know that. It's just that
Hobgoblins.
They were never built to be a player race.
Again, you say that, but they had stats.
They did have stats.
You could play them.
Right.
Again, just less but typical. Just like you could do trolls, just less typical.
They didn't level accordingly, or could you just level them up the same way?
In 3.5, you took your level adjustments, so they'd be X amount of levels counted as higher than their class level. So if you had, like, a drow was a level adjustment, like, 1 or 2, so playing a dark elf would mean you're starting at the power level of a level, like, 2 character, or level 3 character.
Oh.
So you would advance in your class slower, because you start more powerfully.
I guess what I'm thinking is, it didn't feel like, when I look at different monsters and how they're laid out in the book, the description and the features of them are not as fleshed out as when I see what they did to the characters past Volos. They did seem to flesh out what those characters are capable of. And
well, yeah, I mean, in the Monsters Manual, for instance, Bugbears would have an entry about their stats and then kind of, like, what their society is like. I assume they'll have, since they're sort of goblinoid, they'll have an entry there with it that tells you about, like, their tactics and, like, their society background, maybe, and some of that stuff. But where the player's mm-hmm. handbook, you have the player races, which are things people actually need to know more about. Mm-hmm. They tend to flesh those out a bit more.
Yeah.
Because it's more integral to your character building.
I see. Yeah.
But, all right. You know, it's not that you build stuff to be players, because you would still, if building a bugbear is the same as building a bugbear as a monster, because it would, you don't change the abilities or anything between a character and a monster bugbear. You just make sure that you have the abilities and you balance out what they can do and will be able to do.
To simplify the whole thing, they actually did have official write-ups on all of them. So that you know when you're just choosing a player race, you just have them readily available.
Yeah, that's that can way easier than sheet. That's way easier than going into the monster manual and doing it yourself.
Trying to work it out. Yeah, you can just say, yeah, my character is this, and then you can utilize it the same exact way as you could if you were a human or an elf. Or
so you're gonna play a unicorn. I'm gonna play a nightmare.
You're gonna play a nightmare. Well, you know, if people listen to our our episode with James D'Amato. A nightmare is apparently my arch villain for Snowball.
Well, yeah, because nightmares are not unicorns. They don't have horns, but they are horses of darkness and fire.
That must be fun for you. Are you going to call it Abraxas?
Probably Hellion.
Ghost Rider.
Probably Hellion.
You could call it Nicolas Cage.
No, we're done.
So anyway, in more recent times, like since some of the newer supplements, it's become pretty commonplace that you can play different kinds of monsters or anthropomorphic animals.
Khajiit has many wares.
Tabaxi is innocent of these crimes. So, you can do those things, and it got us to thinking about what are some other potential animals that you could turn into playable races.
Yes.
So, thoughts on that. What is your, like, first thought when it comes to a race, like, an actual creature that you could make into?
Lots of things. Lots of animals, lots of monsters you could turn into characters, playable mm-hmm. races. Mm-hmm. And you don't just have to go with ones that already exist in the monster manual, for instance. For instance, you know, lizard folk are a thing. Why not have a variant of lizard folk that is a chameleon?
You would have a chameleon and its name would be Karma.
I mean, that would probably be what you name it, but yeah.
Or your actual race would be Carmeleon.
Carmeleon? No, that's... No.
Chameleon. Thought process on that. So, things we know about chameleon is that, like, they can change their colors and stuff, they can blend in.
They would have bonuses to camouflage, to being stealthy. Okay.
Yeah, so stealth bonuses. Yeah.
They would get bonuses to perception, because their eyes can go in different directions. Mm-hmm. So for that stuff, you kind of... take the traits of the creature you're looking at and kind of go, all right, well, what are things they can do? So a chameleon as a race, you'd get the camouflage, so you'd get bonus to stealth in any environment, really, because you can blend. It would be something like if you're in an environment for more than 5 minutes and you're like standing still for more than a minute or something like that, you can mm-hmm. blend your colors, but you'd also get a disadvantage, perhaps, to bluff based on your mood, because chameleons kind of change depending on their mood. So they could blend into the place they're with, but they might also have a disadvantage to, say, lying to people.
So deception might not be their strong suit.
Right.
Yeah, that's interesting. I would also think that their speed would be pretty low.
I mean, you could still give it the same base speed as, like, a dwarf, maybe.
Okay, so like 25, 30 feet.
Yeah, so it might be slower than a human or an elf, but it would still be, you know, it's a bipedal animal at this point, because mm-hmm. none of the player races are really quadrupeds.
Yeah.
Except for maybe centaurs, but that we don't count that.
No, not centaurs. Never centaurs. What are you talking about? That's crazy times. Okay. So yeah, no, I get the idea of a chameleon. Could you do something with the tongue?
Sure. Like, I mean, yeah. They actually, the tongue, when they spit it out, it's quick. So you could do something like that, like able to grab onto things and retrieve them if they're light objects.
Oh, you know what you do? They get sleight of hand bonuses. Because they'd be able to do pickpocketing from range.
Only if they can grab it with their tongue.
Maybe they just have a really sticky tongue.
I mean, they do.
That would actually make them perfect for rogues.
Maybe.
Because, you know, they'd also get naturally camouflaged.
They would also get, like, a climb speed because they're able to stick to things kind of really good. I don't know if chameleons are sticky.
No, but I would imagine their climb speed would be, like, relative to their run speed.
Yeah, they'd
get the same.
Climb speed.
That's not outside the realm of possibility, because there are other, like, I know that the tabaxis basically are able to climb as fast as they can run.
What do you think a chameleon would get for stat bonuses? Probably, I would say constitution.
Probably.
And maybe wisdom?
Charisma. Because charisma starts with chameleon. Charismelian.
Charismelia.
Charismelia. There you go. That sounds like a great idea. So yeah, no, that's an interesting idea for a variant. Here's one that I was thinking of a minute ago. Okay. This is what I'm thinking. Bat. Now
a bat.
Think about that though, because you know, Man Bat was like Batman's, like it was kind of like Batman, but was a bat that was resembled a man. But then also, if you look at like Scorch Beasts in the Fallout universe, those things are mean. But here's what I was thinking about bats. Okay, so like kind of like an Aarakocra, they'd be able to fly, right? But I think that there's a real thing that you could do with, like, it would be similar to dark vision, but it would be based in sound, and so they would have like subsonic hearing.
That's called blind sense.
Okay, blind sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
In other, I don't know if in 5e it's blind sense as well, but blind sense would be you're using other senses to basically navigate. Although bats don't have bad vision. They
can locate things a lot better with echolocation. Yeah.
But they can see, so they're not blind by any means.
Well, I mean, that's like dolphins too. You know, they can see. It's just that echolocation helps them locate things from further away than they can see.
Right.
What I was thinking of is that would give them a distinct advantage. It would almost be like dark vision, but yeah, like you said, blind sense. So it really would only be negative. Like, they would never really be in complete darkness unless there was like an area of silence or some kind of spell.
I mean,
around that would prevent them from hearing.
Yeah, blind sense doesn't matter about vision, so.
Yeah. And I think that they could have a natural weapon, too, for biting. And if they did, how about if you had that bat character, and then they got vampirism?
Why would you give them vampirism?
Because they're already a bat.
I mean,
so now they're a vampire bat, Alex.
Make it so that they could function upside down just fine.
Oh, that would be fun. Yeah, because they could get to the top of caves and stuff real easy, and then they could just sit there and wait. That would make them great for spies and ops.
They are at home in the underground and in caves.
Yeah, that's a good place for them.
See, the thing you have to realize when you're thinking of creatures to make races is, why would you make it a race? So, what would you do with a man-sized bat?
Run away quickly.
Alright, so what is the idea of having a man-sized bat? Like, what would that bring to a person wanting to play a character? Of course, you could obviously make Batman.
Yeah, we would actually have a bat that wants to be Batman.
Na, 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 na,
well,
na, na,
actually, that would be kind of interesting, because sometimes what I like to do is, like, mind palace this idea of if you took, like, superheroes or comic book characters or something like that, and you wanted to translate them into a world like Dungeons & Dragons, what would that version look like? As a person who's playing a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle, I had to think about, like, what would that a TMNT character look like if it was actually in a Dungeons & Dragons setting? Could you make that? And what would be the reality of the situation in that sort of setting? So, for a Batman kind of character, an actual bat kind of makes sense.
I mean, I guess it kind of makes sense.
I think that there should be a thing where they can bite, and they also can regain some of their health when they bite an organic life form.
See, but That just doesn't really work with, like, an actual bat.
Well, but we're making a man-sized fantasy bat.
Maybe a fantasy bat can be a real vampire. Speaking about vampirism and bats, I actually had an idea a while back for a subrace of goblin.
Mm-hmm.
So I had an idea, and I wanted to make it, and I just haven't gotten around to it. So I'll talk it out with you for a minute, because why not, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have this race of goblins, like actual goblins, except they don't live underground necessarily or in caves and lairs like that. These ones are native to more of a jungle atmosphere, and they don't live on the ground, but they live up in the trees, right? So these goblins are native to the treetop jungle area of, say, this really big forest. I had an idea for a place. It's doesn't really matter where, you could adapt them to anything. But they are kind of like pygmies. If you remember the Diablo 2 pygmies that had shrunken heads and
blood arts.
So these ones are basically bone eaters. They're nasty little goblins. They're black because of darkness. They go out at night. They're nocturnal. They use bats as riding animals, which is a thing they normally do, like dire bats. But they, essentially, the reason that these goblins are the way they are is because they've got slightly vampiric origins. They're kind of blood drinkers, but not vampirism. They drink blood because it's just what they do. They're also bone eaters, but they also use the bones of the animals they kill and the creatures they kill to make weapons out of. So they've got bone spears, blow dart guns that use bone needles. They're familiar with poisons because they're in the jungle. So they're not, like, super deadly on their own, but when you've got a group of 20 goblins and they've all got poisoned blow dart guns...
Yeah, no, that's
you
bad.
You know, that is bad. Plus they're riding bats. So the idea was that this race would be like that, and they'd live in the treetops, and they'd kind of be ambushers.
Yeah.
Because they sneak up on their prey.
Yeah.
And they gang up on it. And they follow it and they murder it. And then eat the bones and the blood. They were supposed to be a very creepy goblin, obviously.
And sounds like it, yes.
So those are just the normal goblins, but the goblin, like, because they have goblins in their society have the normal goblins, and they have, like, the goblin shamans or whatever, the elites, the higher ups, the big goblins.
Mm-hmm.
That aren't hobgoblins or bugbears. So the higher-ups in the Society of Goblins would actually have manifested some necrotic-type powers from vampirism. Because just of how they are, and I don't have, like, any lore reasons for it. But,
right.
So they're all necromantic and kind of vampiric-like, but the more powerful ones would actually have some access to, like, either blood magic or transformation into a bat form or spell-like abilities that are driven from necromancy.
Okay.
Because honestly, goblins just kind of get used a lot as just cannon fodder. Like, you just see goblins getting trolled a lot and just killing hundreds and hundreds of poor little goblins.
Oh, I love it.
These ones would not be ones that are going to be just rolled over. They would be goblins that you would be unassumingly walking into their forest, and then suddenly 15 blow darts come out of nowhere.
They're very good en masse.
Yeah, I mean, that's how goblins have to be used correctly. If you're going to use goblins, use them en masse, or use them as just, again, cannon fodder. They're just sheep to the slaughter.
But the thing that I'm trying to figure out is, like, if you were making them something that you could play, they'd kind of have to be able to at least hold their own.
I mean, you could. You would still have the stats. And I know in 3.5, the stats that you got from picking a race were different than in 5e, because 5e doesn't have any negatives at all, and 3.5 did. Yeah. So, like, your half-orc gets a bonus to strength, and they used to get a negative to charisma, I think.
Yeah.
I think they had strength and constitution and got a negative to charisma because they're ugly. But in 5e, I think it's just strength and charisma now. Their constitution.
Because I'm starting to think, you know what would be perfect for them is if they were, like, a wizard. and they were necromancer.
They would get bonuses to. They would obviously get bonuses to dexterity,
mm-hmm.
Because they're small and nimble. They would also get bonuses to like stealth because they're naturally darker. Well, in dark environments, they'd have dark vision. They might have a couple. If again, the more powerful ones might develop spell-like abilities.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you could pull that from something. You could figure out like. Oh, well, once a day they can cast one of those spells that leeches life from things, like you were saying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then maybe once they reach, like, 6th or 7th level, they get the ability to turn into a bat, like, once a day for 10 minutes or something like that.
If I'm correct, they did make a playable race for goblins, but I don't think they have any variations.
Well, I mean, there's not a lot of variations that you see in goblins typically. They're just kind of run-of-the-mill goblins here and there.
Right, right.
But, I mean, there's no reason, again, that you can't make variants for them.
That's true.
I mean, look at elves and dwarves mm-hmm. and how many variations they have. I mean, even gnolls. Right. I don't know if there's any, like, legit in-the-book variations on gnolls, but there's variations on gnolls because they're depending on the environment they're from. They would have different colorations. They might not have any mechanical difference, but there's variations on the coloring and their attitudes, definitely.
Oh, they definitely have attitude.
Yeah, they do.
So that's an idea, doing variations on things that are already established.
I like variations because they're actually fairly easy to develop as long as you try and keep them balanced.
Right. Well, like... I don't think this was ever made as an official Dungeons & Dragons option, but I do know that, like, there were, at least in homebrewing, there were, like, a few basic variants for Tortles, like, when I was originally looking up Tortles. So you had, like, the desert version, you had the Razorback, and you had, I think, the Soft Shell was the other one. And you could see why all of those would be beneficial. And why you would want to do different ones. You know, I could totally understand. I think the desert turtle, just because it's all about defense, is for a set number of times a day, you could, like, add your constitution modifier to your AC for defense. But you could only do it a number of times between, like, long rests that was equal to your modifier.
Yeah, and things like that you need to be careful of balance-wise, because... Usually the abilities like that you get come from your class.
Right.
And so if you have powerful things from your race,
you
need to find a way to balance that out the other way. Because you're like, oh, well, you can add like 5 to your AC 3 times a day or based on your modifier.
Mm-hmm.
That can be really overpowered if you are able to use it too much or if it lasts too long.
Right.
So there needs to be some... drawback to have that good of an ability. That's part of the reason I don't like a lot of homebrew stuff. And I know now with the DM's Guild adepts and all the DM's Guild stuff, there's a lot of more sanctioned, you know, maybe not for in everyone's game, but it's more deliberately thought out and not like, just like, I'm making a homebrew to break it. They're actually balancing things way more.
Yeah, what they were trying to do is make it an actual balance thing you could implement without totally breaking the system that you have. It might not be something you can do for Adventurers Guild or something like that, but, you know, if you wanted to do stuff that was, like, more in DM's Guild or even what they're bringing out in Unearthed Arcana, they're even starting to rework that a lot, you know?
Yeah.
They keep coming up with different versions as time goes on, but that's stuff that's supposed to be implementable. In the actual game, which brings me to the idea that maybe another episode we got to do is you know, different kind of classes that you could make.
I mean, that would be many episodes, Nathan. There's 11 base 12 base classes, and then there's at least 3 archetypes for each class.
Well, because I've seen some, I don't think they're considered Adventurers Guild legal ones, but they are other classes and subclasses that were made by WotC partnered people that are listed on D&D Beyond, that are listed on official sites.
Yeah.
I kind of want to dig into at some point, because some of them are really interesting and I want to know the real application for them over some of the basic ones, but that's for a different episode. Now, this also brings up something that we were talking about before, which you had made the case that the most dangerous animal is a mosquito, that it kills more people than anybody else.
Yes.
And I still say hippo, because a hippo directly kills you. A mosquito needs a virus in order to do that. That is up to your philosophical beliefs, I suppose. But regardless, there is the possibility of creating an insectoid race.
Yes.
I know that they don't have one for, like, an official race, but I don't know if there's even a creature in Dungeons & Dragons that's reminiscent of it, but you're probably correct me on that.
Well, there's definitely bees. I don't remember the name of them
this
second, but there are humanoid bees that exist.
Oh, I want that. I want to be a bee.
And I don't remember what they're named right now. Somebody can tweet at us or comment on this with the name of them.
The special thing about about a playable race of bees is that you do have a natural defense. It's your stinger, and it deals like massive damage, but you can only use it once. And after you do, your character dies.
Yeah. But, they've got some humanoid bees. Mm-hmm. Aside from that, I don't really know of too many humanoid bugs.
Okay.
But I don't see why you couldn't do that. Like, maybe you could be a human praying mantis hybrid.
Oh, well, that would be a monk. That would be a perfect monk character right there.
But there's billions. There's lots of insects. I mean, you could do arachnids. They have driders, though, so I don't know if you'd really want to do an arachnid. Then you'd just be Spider-Man. The mechanics for an arachnid humanoid would be interesting. You'd probably just end up copying drider mechanics for it.
Okay.
Because driders are basically the spider equivalent to a centaur. I'm not sure if you've seen a drider before.
I have not, but I will look it up.
Driders are half drow, half spider.
Why? Like, because, oh, wow. Yeah.
Because Lolth likes to punish her constituents.
Okay, so I'm seeing it. So if you imagine that it's a centaur, but instead of the human part at the top, it's an elf, and instead of a horse at the bottom, it's a spider.
Yeah, that's a drider.
That's a drider. Okay. Yeah, a drow spider.
I wonder if you could reduce... You know what the best way to kill a drider would be?
Just shine a light at them?
No. To kill a drider, I think the best way you could do it is to use a reduce monster or reduce person spell on it, and shrink it down and then step on it. Or take and put it in a cup and put it outside.
or here's another thought you could do. Like in the Monty Python, you just draw a foot over the screen, and you just step on the drider.
Or the other way you can do it is you can get a pipe, or a gutter at this point, and a water spout, and you make the drider crawl up it, and then you create water and drown the crap out of it.
So, this all brings me to the thing that I think everybody really wanted to get to. How do we create a party that basically mimics Madagascar, the movie?
I think this episode's over.
Because we got the hippo, we got the giraffe, we got the zebra, we got the lion. How do we make
you got those? A Khajiit.
You got the Khajiit. Well,
you use
the lion.
Tabaxi. You could use a centaur as a zebra.
I mean, I suppose you could just take the Luxodon and you could just make it a hippo instead.
I mean, sure.
It wouldn't have the trunk.
We're not making Madagascar. Let's just go with that.
How about Lion King?
No.
Can I make Timon and Pumbaa?
I mean,
I need a warthog, and I need
you could make an anthropomorphic boar.
Okay.
I would base them off a half-orc if I was going to make them, because the half-orcs already have the tusks, so you could make bigger tusks. Okay. Maybe give them a gore attack.
Yeah. They would have to have some kind of thing. With
they would
tusks.
Get like no. You don't give them a gore attack. You give them a rage ability without being a barbarian.
Oh.
Because boars are nasty.
Right. Yeah.
But you also give them advantage to perception checks that are based on smell.
I would imagine, though, that, like, when they're in some kind of a rage state, that they also have some limited perception or something like that, because they're so focused on one particular
thing.
It would
be like a blind rage. It
would be a blind rage,
where
yeah.
you just focus on the object of your rage, and you
okay.
don't stop until you're either out cold, or until the rage subsides, or the target, even if the target's dead, you don't stop, so.
Yeah, because the only thing I'm thinking is that that would be pretty potent if you were playing a thing besides a barbarian, because you'd still have rage with whatever.
I mean, it depends. You could make it not as good as you want. Like, you could make it so you have to, like, if you take more than your half your total hit points of damage in a single yeah. hit, for instance,
yeah,
you could make it so that you have to make a constitution saving throw, and if you fail it, you go into a rage.
Yeah, you don't, almost like it's an uncontrollable one.
Yeah.
Maybe you don't get to choose your targets. Maybe it has to just be the uncontrollable target.
Uncontrollable rages, you don't. I would assume you go for the closest target, or if you can see the person that hit you and you know they hit you, you'd go after them.
Which could be really dangerous if your party is in close quarters and you just start attacking your own.
Yeah, you charge right at them.
So basically, your blind rage in some ways can be a very negative thing if it's not implemented properly.
I mean, yeah, but it's no worse than a sorcerer that does wild magic. Also, while you're raging, you can't use spells, so if you're a caster, then welp.
That would be a very difficult character to play. I would also imagine that human-boar hybrid thing probably would not be naturally very good at intelligence or magic-related things. Chances are probably a fighter class. But what about lemur?
Why?
We made Pumbaa, now I need Timon.
I mean, you'd have to have a lemur beast based off something like gnome-sized and lean. Like, you could almost just make a dire lemur and give that it exceptional intelligence, just like a weasel.
I'm thinking that probably the benefits of it would be that it probably got really high dexterity.
Yeah, they would probably have pretty good dexterity.
They're probably good at things like thievery and pickpocketing.
Sneaking.
And to getting into small spaces. Like, I imagine that they could actually be very useful if you wound up with openings or crevasses that are too small for most characters to get through. A lemur could figure out how to get in there. Like, you could yeah, get through a fairly small space. They might actually be fairly useful as characters.
Maybe. I mean, especially they're small, they're stealthy, they're quick, they're agile.
Yeah.
They could be interesting. Again, I don't know what you do for mechanics of a lemur, because I don't really know what they're like.
I think they could have a burrow speed.
Do they burrow?
Yeah. That's why you always see, like, the little lemurs, like, pop out of the ground. You know how you see them all just kind of, like, go whoop, and they're up.
Yeah.
So they could have a burrow speed that's, like, equivalent to, like, their walking speed. Yeah,
probably, like, half their walking speed. Let's be all realistic.
Yeah, all right. Half their walking speed. I bet they, I could see where they would have advantage to saving throws against grappling, because they're hard to, like, grab onto. You'd have to, they're slippery.
Like a mink.
They're like a mink. They're of the weasel persuasion, essentially.
So would you give a lemur a dexterity bonus and a charisma bonus then?
Yes, I think those would be the most logical things to do.
Or would you give it dexterity and intelligence?
It's a good question. No, yeah. I think charisma probably makes
because
sense.
Because they're so cute.
They're so cute, and if you remember Timon, you know, fast talker, always,
yeah,
you know,
that,
the communication
that's true.
Kind of character, you know, that would kind of make sense. And that would actually make them perfectly suited to be like a rogue.
I mean, here's the thing, you can think of races having specific classes in mind, but you don't want to tailor make them to be exceptionally good at a specific class.
Yeah, but I mean,
because you want them to be versatile,
right? But if you think about it, a lot of them will definitely lend themselves well to certain playstyles.
Oh yeah, I mean, like ability wise, because again, not every race needs to have like special abilities. I mean,
right.
They do have abilities, so you might give your lemur a burrow ability, like they're able to burrow at half their walking speed into the ground.
Yeah.
Up to whatever, kind of like a dwarf stone cutting abilities.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you don't need to make like anything that's like combat specific.
Right.
Or that's like
oh,
get
yeah,
out of
yeah,
jail
yeah.
free card or, you know.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I'm playing a character who's not particularly well suited for the class that he's in.
Sort of. I mean, he's not stealthy, but I mean, I think he makes a good monk.
He does make a good monk. He doesn't make a particularly good shadow monk because you know, his dexterity is real low, and Tortles don't have dark vision. So there's some definite limitations to what they can do. But what he makes up for is that he's strong and he is really hard to hit. He's very girthy. So
he's very good in hand-to-hand combat.
What it does is that actually makes him really versatile, because he still has some shadow abilities that help him out in a pinch, and he can utilize them in interesting ways. But he's also kind of like a straightforward, I hit things with my staff kind of character.
Clearly you just need to cross class.
Maybe. You know what? That's probably why people choose human as a race, right?
Because they're versatile.
You just get a bonus to every one of your stats, and that's it. It's straightforward. You can play any kind of character. You're going to be perfectly well suited regardless.
Yeah, I mean, yes and no.
Well, you can do any of those classes equally well.
I mean, you can do that with any class depending on your roles anyways.
I don't know. Like, I keep thinking to myself, like, there are some, like, to go back to a tabaxi is great for rogues, you know, because
they would also be great as bards.
Yeah, I suppose they would, but I guess what I'm thinking is, one, they're fast, you know.
That means they'd also make a very agile fighter.
Hmm, that's true. Then they also have the dark vision.
They'd also make a really good monk, because they're light and fast.
That's true.
And they're able to fly, so they could fly down and dive bomb you.
Right.
With monk unarmed damage.
Right. I can see
now,
that.
Also imagine a flying barbarian rage.
Ooh, that's fun.
Yeah, as I said, they can be as versatile as you need them to.
Yeah, imagine I wanted to make an Aarakocra as a druid so that I could fly up and then I could turn into a bear and I could be a literal drop bear.
That's my thing.
Well, then you gotta make that character.
I already have that character. Hephaestus would turn into whatever, fly into the air, or jump up over a hole in a pit, and turn to a bear on the way down. Or climb up into the ceiling as a spider, and then turn into a bear.
Is it fair to say that if I were building, like, a playable race that was based around animals, that if I were giving them any of the typical things that you see a druid being able to turn into, like the swim speed of fish or the flight ability of an eagle, it's not out of the realm of possibility to just give those to a playable race, because a druid could turn into any one of them anyway.
See, here's the thing with that, though. Druids don't get those until later. They don't get them to begin with, and they don't get them at first when they are able to shapeshift. So, like,
right.
The ability to turn into an animal with shapeshift that has a swim speed, I don't think you get into, like, 6th level.
Okay, but the druid...
flight is later than that. It's, like, 8 or 9.
But the druid, once they do have that, they can turn into animals that allow them to have, you know, an equitable swim speed or breathing underwater or being able to fly. What I'm talking about is when you have a playable race, yeah, they can do it naturally at first level, but they only really have one of those things. Like, they only have, like, the ability to have a swim speed, or they can fly. They can't swim, but they can fly, you know. They don't have the versatility, but it is one of those things that you could see an animal of a comparable level, or even a CR1, CR1 half or whatever monster, is able to have that as a thing.
I mean,
so it made sense that
that's the thing. With the race being able to do it, I don't know what the Aarakocra and the Kenku get for flight. I assume it's limited.
If I were to look it up, I don't think the Kenku can fly.
So it's a flightless bird?
No, I don't think they do. But the Aarakocra, if I remember correctly, you have a flying speed of 50 feet. To use the speed, you can't be wearing medium or heavy armor.
Is there anything else? That's it?
Nope, that's it. That's all they say about flight.
So yeah, I mean,
as long as you're wearing light armor or clothing, you can fly 50 feet.
I assume you would also have to be lightly encumbered.
Doesn't say. Well, it's
It may not say it specifically, but if you have to not be wearing medium or heavy armor, then it means you can't have a load that's more than, like, 25 pounds.
But they themselves only have bodies that weigh 80 to 100 pounds.
Well, medium armor is generally 25 pounds or heavier. Not, like, by average weight, but by, like, a chain shirt is, like, 25 pounds, and that's light armor. So anything heavier than, like, 30 to 35 tends to be, like, medium breastplate is a medium armor. So anything, like, above 30 pounds would be a medium. So I assume to do that, you'd want to be lightly encumbered. You wouldn't want to be carrying, say, a 12-pound greatsword and a tower shield.
Oh, but that's fun.
Yeah, also, how are you going to fly if you're holding a greatsword?
It's fantasy. Yeah, I'm just deal with it.
you gotta use your wings. I assume your wings are your arms. It's not crazy, although that is faster than any other characters can move, so...
That's what's interesting.
Even though it's legal, I think that's a bit much. I would say a flying speed of maybe 40, but not 50. Because then imagine your monk. What's their land speed?
Base walking speed, 25 feet.
See, they're slower on land, and I assume swimming they'd be even slower.
It actually doesn't even say that they could swim or not.
I mean, so maybe most things can swim without saying they can swim.
But I'm guessing that the swim speed is low.
I mean, there may not be a rule for it, but with all the feathers.
Yeah, and I would imagine that if you've gotten in the water, flying is going to be hard for a little while.
I mean, as a DM, I would rule that. It's like, yeah, your wings are soaked.
But to say basically that, like, if I were building a race, considering that they have already made it pretty well established that there are races or sub-races that are able to do those things, it's not out of the realm of possibility that I would build it. Like, if I said that I wanted to have, like, my Batman race, right? It wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility that I would look at the Aarakocra and say, well, the Aarakocra can do a 50-foot flight speed.
Yeah.
It's not out of the realm of possibility. That's an official playable race, so my bat race could do that too.
That's not out of the realm of possibility, no. Again, it will depend on what other abilities you want to give them.
Right.
And whatnot. But if, say, that's the only thing you're giving them is a flight speed, and then, like, the ability to hang upside down without any issue, for instance,
right.
That wouldn't be too OP, because that's not a whole lot.
Yeah. I think we've talked for quite a while. We might eventually have to come back to this as we start now Mind Palace. For the next week or so, we're going to be like, what other animals could we make? But, so we might actually end up coming back to this at some point.
We'll have to do a live show about it.
Maybe we'll do a live show about it. Maybe that's what we'll do in March. When we do the show in March, maybe we'll get people's ideas on this. So if you're hearing this and you end up joining us for that, bring in the animal and what you want to do with it. However, in the meantime, now that we've gotten completely, in touch with our spirit animals, if folks would like to get in touch with their Delve-related animal spirit, where could they go?
You can find more Delve over at DelveCast.com.
Yep, and you can find all of our projects over there, not just Delve, but also Orbital and Attempting to Play, and the other special things, kind of like the off-topic things that we do. And please click on our Patreon banner when you go, and check out some of the extra offerings that we have, like a longer, extended conversation, apparently, on this one about Monopoly for Millennials. There's something you can find over there right now. For just a whole dollar a month, you can get all of that content unlocked. And thank you to our shiny level patrons, Bonnie Ainsworth and Dominic Perry. I would also like to just say, if you have us on Facebook, thank you very much. We do try to post over there. And if you want to find us on Twitter, I am at Citanium.
I am at EXP Limited, and the show is at Delve Podcast.
And if you use any sort of podcast apps, please rate and review and subscribe. So like iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify.
Let us know, or just do that thing and share it with your friends if you think they'd like us, because we could always use more listeners and visibility.
More people listening hopefully creates a better conversation. And gets more input, and we like input.
Nathan just wants to see himself on the top 200 again.
Yeah, it happens rarely, but it would be nice if I just if just like suddenly I just went on there and it's like, ooh.
We like to know that you like our show.
Yeah, we would love to have better engagement, more engagement with people and have conversations with them.
Absolutely. Speaking of engagement and conversations with people on Twitter and bigger audiences, shout out to Crits McCrits for our episode last week. They enjoyed that and let us know how they felt about health and damage in games.
Yes, and so we always like to have that input because it gives us something to really to work off of. You know, we get to have a conversation so we know we're not just shouting into a void. You know, people are
we are shouting into void.
We do. Can anybody hear us? So so thank you for that. And to everybody who is able to give us new input. Input's great, you know. And it's something I like to say, you know, if you have creators that you like out there, if you're not able to support them in a financial sense or be on their Patreons, just being able to be actively engaged with them is great. And I would always encourage you to do that, to make your comments, to be part of the community. They really appreciate that. I know we do. So until next time, we are going to go and think of other spirit animals that we can attune ourselves to. Saber-toothed tiger. That's the next one. Fangs. No. It's going to be a variant of a tabaxi. Saber-toothed tabaxi. Saber tabaxi. Until next time, everybody, thank you for joining us. Bye.
Bye.
And then if I go to, like, the Park Place and the Boardwalk Squares, they're actually a 3-day music festival and a week-long meditation retreat. Thoughts?
A week-long meditation retreat? Millennials can afford that.
According to this, it's like 50 Monopoly bucks in this world.
Millennials still can't afford that. So, I'm on...
50 Monopoly.
We need to make a race for D&D that's an anthropomorphic porcupine.
Oh, that would be great. And, oh, you know what would be a great skill for it to have? It could do, like, a natural defense thing as a ranged attack. They'll love to have the thought process that led to this. But, okay, so I'm gonna...
Will they, or will they be like, wow, we're listening to a lot... Oh, there's an episode attached to this? Wow!
Look at how much extra you get, folks!